refuses to do, broadcast the demands and dreams of the 99% and put local events into a global context. We need your number one vote. Join us at OccupyKPFT.org.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Special smokers edition of Technology Bites.
Have you been smoking?
No.
You sound like you've been smoking.
Yeah, I'm just sick.
Well, good.
But I'm not real sick. I'm just sound sick.
Yes, you sound ill.
Yeah, but I feel fine.
Kind of chill.
My throat and sinuses are kind of jacked up.
He's ill and not chilling.
All right.
You be illin'.
Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Pete Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight. And he's...
Brewhouse.
All right, well, so another week without a fundraiser. That's nice. I want to thank Ray, who had some pizzas delivered to the radio station in support of Technology Bites after our fundraiser.
That was excellent.
That
Thanks,
was great.
Thank
Did you get one,
much.
Pete?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Pete. we'll fax you one.
We'll send you a picture.
All right.
over the interwebs.
Save Somebody's
got slice in Dropbox.
I'm surprised that there weren't a bunch of camera phone pictures taken of the pizza.
There wasn't.
There wasn't time.
There was just...
No, it was
eat.
Gone before it cooled down. It was, yeah.
Yeah, so... All right, well, we're glad you could be here. We want to let you know that next week we will be not here.
What?
Not here.
Not here?
No,
Where
Technology Bites... Technology Bites is preempted for... the Pacifica Radio Archives fundraiser.
Oh.
So they'll be raising money for the Pacifica Radio Archives, and we won't be here.
Man, I'm going to forget.
Yeah, you'll show up. I'm just proud of Barrett for being here.
Of course, usually he preempts the preemption. So
President.
President?
It's like present, only it's more inaugural. More topical. We're done with all that, though. So
we are. We are so done. So done with all that. Now, well, you know, I guess we're done with that, but...
I don't think we've discussed politics nearly enough in this country recently.
I don't think you could do it more.
No? Well, I don't want to do it now.
Fortunately, I don't really ever watch TV, so for me, it really wasn't any different than any other time period, except I had to see it on Facebook and Twitter.
It was kind of annoying, but I do think I kind of contributed to some of that, so. I tried to stay as,
Switzerland?
As non-inflammatory as I possibly could, but not take it all seriously.
Last night? Or just in general?
Leading up to and last night I really didn't, I did some, but not much, but yesterday during the day I did some, you know, some bad jokes.
There are things that I want to say, but because of our rules at the mighty Houston Chronicle, I cannot say sometimes what I would like to say.
No? Well, you want to say it now?
Do you feel no? What is it that you can't say? No.
Tell us, give us an example of a thing you dare not say.
No.
What do you think? What do you think that I might say?
If I were you and not allowed to say it.
I do know that some of my bosses listen to this show. You probably accidentally, so I'll just, you know. I have no opinion about politics.
Dwight's going dark.
Dark fiber.
All right. Well, you can check us out online at geekradio.com. You can also participate in our online chat where we hang out in IRC on the channel Tech Bytes on irc.cuckoo.com. You can also access that via our website. We have a Java client that you can use to do that. Or you can use your own IRC client. Just connect up to the server irc.cuckoo.com and join the channel. So that'll be going on tonight. The Geek Gathering last Friday was actually very awesome, I think. What do you think, Dwight? Did you like it?
It was very awesome.
The weather was good. Cooperated.
So far, the weather for all of them out there in the parking lot at Cones, which we now know.
Know it's pronounced Cones.
Cones. was great, and the beer was good, and the music was excellent.
The band that they had was very non-intrusive, and it was good. They can hire that band back. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm working with one of the musicians who's a friend of mine. She plays the theremin. And I want her to bring a theremin out to the next
That would be a lot
gathering.
Of fun. And we also, we had an iPad mini unboxing.
We had a lot of tech. We had a lot of really good tech. I mean, you had the Slate out there. There was the
Surface, Microsoft.
The Surface, right. Yeah, and the obligatory iPads. But then somebody.
Jeff Kabuli bought
Jeff Kabuli had bought one on the way to the iPad mini on the way to the to the Geek Gathering.
And unboxed it right there.
Dwight loves the unboxings.
I do.
Unbox it slowly.
I was more impressed than I thought I would be with it. It's a lot nicer device than I expected.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not ready to trade in my full-sized iPad.
You're not supposed to. You're supposed to get that in addition to.
No. That's gratuitous. But anyway, I liked it.
Well, it was good fun, and I'm really glad for all the people that came out and hung out with us for the Geek Gathering. We had a very good time, and the one last month was good, but it wasn't as good as this one or the one before that one. But this was really good. There was just a good amount of people that showed up, so I was really glad for that. All right, so again, like I mentioned before, we won't be on the air with you next week. So if you want to participate in Technology Bites, this is one of your few opportunities before, hopefully by the end of the year, we will be into just regular programming. I'm sure that we have the holidays coming up, Christmas and Thanksgiving and all that. I don't think there's going to be preemptions for that, but I know people will be doing their own thing. And then next thing you know, it'll be 2013. And I can make no guarantees on that. All right. I see that everything is in place and ready to go, so we're going to go out to San Antonio, via Skype, do the Technology Bytes Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, one thing on the rise of geeks is in this election, and this is a nonpartisan deal, so no worries on on that, whichever side you're on, unless you didn't pay attention to them. In the election, the person who had the best numbers was a statistics geek named Nate Silver, and with 538, which is at, it's existed longer, but it's at the New York Times now, and he nailed, he got, until Florida's done, we won't know, but right now 49 of the states he predicted correctly who was going to win. So that's pretty that's pretty serious stuff, because usually in polls, some of you'll get close, but they won't hit that kind of, you know, they not on that many states. There'll always be some hole in it where they have to explain or some other kind of thing. So, you know, it's the rise of the geeks, and you're going to see a lot more of it. It's like kind of like Moneyball happened to baseball. That's going to happen with political polling. But in other news, this one directly affects Houston. Improvement, T-Mobile announced today that it's activating its 4G HSPA Plus network in three major metropolitan areas, and that was Washington, D.C., and surrounding areas, Baltimore and Houston. So if you're a T-Mobile person, you will reportedly see a significant boost. Now that, you know, and actually, who gets a boost for that? The when the cellular modem version of the Nexus 7, if you're getting your hands on one of those, the HSPA Plus is the network that works on. So if you wanted to get one of those, use it on T-Mobile, you may have a an advantage. Let's see. T-Mobile's internal testing reportedly showed a 70% download speed boost for the iPhone 4S on T-Mobile's network over AT&T's network. So there are other network advancements for other cities, but come on, our show's in Houston. Okay, so working on it for Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, Miami, Minneapolis, New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, San Diego, and Seattle. Just, I know we have people in New York, and I know we get broadcast on the West Coast, so there it is. But, you know, that can be a value if you're moving your iPhone to T-Mobile, and it also could be a value, like I said, if you get a Nexus 7 with cellular. And then this is an interesting one, an interesting sort of change that's happening and is expanding on places. You know, one of the problems when you order stuff over the internet is that problem of being home or else figuring out how to take care of receiving your often very expensive deal that you ordered from, say, Amazon. Well, now Amazon there's a thing called Amazon Lockers, and they're not virtual, they're real world. They've been popping up at 7-Eleven stores and United Kingdom retailers, which is of no value to us, but now they're arriving at more places, like brick and mortar arch competitor Staples is going to have them, and I believe Best Buy is also working on it. The service allows shoppers who missed a delivery to head over to a locker and nab their packages using a 72-hour code, with the host retailer keeping a small fee in return. So that opens up that way you don't have to worry about somebody being there for your delivery. You can have it at one of these lockers and then know that your stuff is safe until you put in your code. So so there's that. In scientific advancements, the March of Progress, and this one's kind of a more, I like this one because, you know, there's the ones where, you know, they send a billion gigabytes through, you know, a thread the size of a hair or whatever kind of stuff. This is about getting more out of what we've already got. And that's kind of cool. They're working on in Bangor, Wales, not Bangor, Maine. Bangor, Wales. Our scientists in Bangor, Wales are researching ways of cramming more data into fiber optic cables and negating dispersion. That's the deterioration of data when it's carried over longer distances at increased rates. The problem is you can put a lot of data through a short distance at high speed, but when you want to put a lot of data through a long distance at high speed, you lose stuff. Previous attempts to solve the issue have focused on more fibers, more lasers, and other signal boosting techniques. The team in Bangor are focusing their attention on existing, here's a good long one, for you. You can memorize for tomorrow in the break room. Optical orthogonal frequency division multiplexing technology. By developing a method to convert data into electrical waves and then into optical data, which can be decoded at the other end with their proprietary system, they're getting 20 gigabits per second is what they're working on right now. You know, that kind of speed's been heard of before. The key is making them practical and accessible to consumers without expensive new infrastructure. The next steps for them are looking at ways to commercialize the technique, but the scientists think there's still potential to get speeds of up to 40 gigabytes per second or gigabits per second, meaning fast connections that could multitask. So you'd be able to download 20 full-length movies in a second. That could work. I'm ready. I've got a connection here at my house, and maybe they can figure out something from Wales to make that work. In other news, Microsoft, you know, they released the Surface tablet. They've released the Windows 8 phone, and they've got Windows 8 for computers out. According to The Verge, a version of Microsoft Office designed for the iPhone and iPad is now expected to arrive on the App Store in early 2013. The interesting part, it'll be free for document viewing, but you'll have to get a subscription if you want to edit. Details were revealed today. There were also screenshots of the software and other details from, quote, several sources close to Microsoft's plans. That means probably somebody is supposed to be leaking this out. Anyway, the Office mobile application will be free option available on the iOS App Store that will require a Microsoft Office account. Included in Office Mobile will be Word, PowerPoint, and Excel support, while those who have an Office 365 subscription will be able to edit documents. Office Mobile is also expected to come to the Android platform, although it's going to be on iOS first. Let's see. So the you apparently will be able to get an Office 365 subscription through the application. The interesting part isn't that fascinating, because that would mean that people are going to be giving a commission to Apple to buy access to subscribe to Office 365 from Microsoft. The report said the subscription will allow for basic editing in the application, though it, quote, won't go very far in attempting to replace regular full use of a desktop Office application. Yeah, we all know how to translate that one from marketing speak to reality. That means you can do a little. You're just not going to want to do a whole lot with it. Those who do not purchase an Office 365 subscription will be able to use the free Office mobile app for iPhone and iPad to basic view documents. So that's good. Last month, the product manager in the Czech Republic indicated that the new version of Office for iOS could arrive as soon as March of 2013. A spokesman for Microsoft declined to give a date, only saying that its Office suite would work across Windows Phone, iOS, and Android. So clearly it looks like the current thing is early 2013, which I guess means anywhere between now and say June of next year. And then there was the big thing. I'm not going to go into lots of depth on it. There was a management shakeup at Apple, and the thing that's more interesting to me about it is, let's see, there's a word that suddenly was showing up all over the place, and it all had to do with, it all had to do with the fact that they canned this guy who was really the big push on it. And the word is skeuomorphic. There's a good one to work in. You know, if you've used iOS at all, especially there was an update, one of the more recent ones, where suddenly they were trying to use kind of real world looking stuff. So there's like a leather deal around the edge of the calendar, and the bookstore, the Apple bookstore, has wooden bookshelves and stuff like that. That guy got canned. they dumped him out for various, there's different stories on the reasons, and the new person who's taking over is Jonathan Ive, who, if you haven't heard of him, he is a designer extraordinaire. He's responsible for the external look of the hardware. So the reason why, you know, the that kind of gotta have it, gotta touch it, MacBook Air feel, the way that the way that their stuff looks on the iPad, the way they taper the edges and the way the iPhone is shaped and how they create, that stuff comes from him. And so now he is going to be in charge of the kind of visual look and feel for the software too. And it won't be, and it apparently is guaranteed to not be skeuomorphic. So, so you've got a few different words, the whole orthogonal thing and skeuomorphic. So it'll be interesting to see in future iterations on iOS in particular, watching maybe some of this stuff disappear and go to its, you know, instead of just using something that's a metaphor for the real world, having something that works more like you expect an iOS app to act instead of an actual book or an actual calendar. And another Apple rumor, this one's a distant out rumor. So no, it's not the next iPhone. It's not the iPad Micro Mini or the iPad Shuffle, which has no screen. It's just got, it's like 3 inches on the side and has a button in the middle to play. According to Bloomberg, Apple is considering moving away from Intel chips for the Mac line. That change would be the third major CPU shift for the brand, which originally relied on Motorola 68000 and PowerPC chips. Ditching Intel silicon would also move away from x86. And this comes about, you know, Apple investing in its own ARM-based chip designs, which is what powering, you know, iPhones and iPads. Bloomberg sources suggest that Cupertino is actively working on a version of its tweaked ARM architecture that would run inside Mac PCs, in particular the laptop products, because of the extreme battery life that you can get out of it. This change would not happen immediately. That's why I said this is long, long term. In fact, the sources said such a move was years away, potentially not happening till 2017. But as the gulf between mobile and desktop products begins to shrink and the boundaries blend, it would only seem to make sense that Apple would look to leverage its high-profile purchase of PA Semi, that's the ones, the designers of a lot of these chips, to good use and inch ever closer to be completely self-reliant. So in other words, end-to-end, where it would design and manufacture all of its products' components in-house. That's kind of wild, but... And it may, you know, Moore's Law might work in their favor on this. If the power of these ARM chips keeps going up and their battery life keeps staying long, then they could have an advantage where it would work, and it would work well enough that people wouldn't, that it wouldn't be a problem for people. Because obviously they're not going to, regardless of how long the battery life is, they're not going to have something that's going to be a lot slower than competitors for running on Intel. So I think this just keeps the door open, probably gives them some leverage with Intel, and it keeps the door open for them to do their own future. And finally, this is a free web app, and I would just think there's a lot of our listeners would benefit from it if they don't already have it. The International Space Station just celebrated its 12th anniversary of having a crew continuously on board, and to mark the occasion, NASA's unveiled a new service to help folks catch the station in the night sky. You know, up to now, I've used, like, Twitter, because particularly some of our listeners, but then some other people that I follow on Twitter will talk about when the ISS is going to pass over their location. Dubbed Spot the Station, the web app texts or emails the time that the ISS will pass over a user's location to their phone. The calculations are done for more than 4,600 places across the globe by the Johnson Space Center, so it's nearby, so you should get it really fast once they calculate it, which determines when the ISS will be high enough in the sky to be seen above obstacles such as trees and buildings. Since the station is the second first object in the night sky after the moon, it'll appear to the naked eye as if it was a star moving at a steady clip. So you can, I would say, look that up. I'm sure if you Google it, or if you go to NASA.gov. Oh, spotthestation.nasa.gov is the place to sign up and get pinged for that. That one's free, and then you'll be able to look all cool, because you'll know the International Space Station's going over, and only the other people who have signed up for this will also know, or the ones who can calculate orbits in their heads and already know where the space station is at every moment. And that's the news.
All right.
Yeah, yes. I considered announcing the new, that Sony A100 camera that they just announced.
Oh, the A100?
It's got like double the specs of the A99 for the same price.
Well, it's funny that this is I bought the A99 from Sony. The first camera I ever bought from them, the first one they ever released, the first digital DSLR was the A100. So
they're working backwards.
Well, actually, they went A100, and then the A700, and then they did some ones in between, the A300s and the A200s. When they switched to the translucent mirror technology, they took the digits and put them into double digits. So it's A77, A99, A65. I don't know, but this is a great camera. Just playing with it while you were doing the news a little bit. And I'm really looking forward to playing with it. It's a camera geek's camera, but it's more of a technology geek's camera because of the features that they've built into the camera. And I could go on about it, but I'm not.
Does Sony still get no respect from camera geeks?
They're getting more respect from camera geeks as time goes by because of what they're doing with their cameras. Unfortunately, it's not that they're not getting respect from camera geeks as much as they're losing a little respect from diehard photographers. They've taken the optical viewfinder out of their cameras, and it's all OLED now. So when you're looking through the viewfinder, you're looking at a tiny OLED screen. And some people have a problem. So, you know, people who are used to looking through a full-size viewfinder, if you have a 100% optical viewfinder, if you've never looked through one, if you're into photography at all, if you've never looked through a full-size viewfinder, you don't know what you're missing because it really does look good because you put your eye up there and you're like swimming in the scene. And that's a nice feeling. They've done a really good job with this. And what I like about it, and this is where we get into the idea that it's more of a geek's camera than a camera geek's camera. I like that it's digital because I get a lot of information on that screen. I'm looking at a tiny computer screen that's showing me the picture.
It's a heads-up display is what you've got.
On top of the fact that I'm seeing what the camera's going to do to it in terms of adjusting for exposure, what the color balance is going to look like, what's actually going to come out in focus, what I can trigger and look at the depth of field. I can see all of that before I even pull the trigger.
You pretend you're RoboCop when you're using the camera.
Yes. Why RoboCop? Why can't I be the Terminator? He had a heads-up display.
Yes, he did.
I just don't have the accent. But, yeah.
Like,
what's that?
So the heads-up display gives probable responses, if you remember well enough.
Right.
When they had
what the probable response was, and Arma said it, so...
Oh, right, yes.
Sorry.
That's okay. You're cutting out a little bit. That's the unfortunate part. I'm hearing, like, I'm getting the gist of the joke.
It's been not funny for
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. The phone number here tonight, if you want to dial in and be on the air with us, talk about cameras or other technology, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. I've got to say, Groovehouse was the winner during the fundraiser when he suggested that on that last show that we just leave the phones the way that all the other shows do during fundraiser. Because it was fun hearing those rings, and I think that really contributed to us making our goal. And speaking of which, if you pledge during the fundraiser, make sure you pay your pledge. If you didn't put it on a credit card, if you get an invoice or a reminder from the station, please take time and pay that. You know, not everybody pledged pizzas. Some of you pledged money, but the one person who pledged a pizza has paid his pledge.
In full.
In full. And we're graciously gracious.
Yes.
Grateful, that's it. Yeah. All right. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. If you want to be on the air with us, we look forward to taking your call. But I see we do have some calls in the queue. So Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who is up first?
Up first on the show. We are going to speak with George.
George, you're on the air.
Hi, Heather.
Two things. Actually, for asking my question, I want to correct a mistake that you guys made a few weeks ago. Right before
I don't want to be correct. If your first thing out of the chute on this call?
It's not a big deal, but not anything technical or anything. Just since I love music so much, it was a musical error that someone said. I wanted to correct, that's all.
Okay.
You had a bad talk, and you're talking about a song called If Loving You Is Wrong and I Want to Be Right.
Yeah.
And you never heard of that song before, and someone said that, someone called in and said it was done by Minnie Riperton. That's absolutely positively wrong. It's two different songs. The Minnie Riperton came out in 1975 called Loving You, and the Luther Ingram song came out in 1972. It's two different songs altogether. That's been bugging me. I love both of those songs. I remember when they were hits, and I just wanted to make that comment. Correct.
There's
nothing, anything that you said. That's all.
Well, we said the song I remember us. We referenced both songs. Loving you is easy because you're beautiful.
Now that's 1975, Minnie Riperton.
Right.
But the one you had in Barrett Talk, you were talking about if loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Oh,
that's a completely different.
Yeah, there were two separate songs.
Yes,
I think.
Yes, they were.
And did we attribute?
If someone called in on the phone and said that Loving You Was Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right was done by Minnie Riperton, and it wasn't. They got the songs confused, that's all.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to the archives to verify your correction.
Oh, yes, I remember that very well. I couldn't call them in at the time. I listened to it on a delay. But
so it must have really killed you to wait until tonight.
Yes. Next week was a fundraiser, and yes, but really, I love both of those songs. I remember they were hits, and I really, really am into that kind of music, so I just had to say something about it. And also, I'm looking for some advice.
All right, well, thanks for your call, George.
Good night.
I'm looking for a free MP3 splitter. I use Mega MP3, but that doesn't work anymore for reasons I won't go into right now. And I need a free MP3 splitter because some MP3 files I record on my new computer are not compatible with that MP3 splitter. I need not a full editor or anything like that.
You just need something that allows you to clip an MP3 file into two files?
Multiple files.
Or multiple files?
Yes.
Kyle, what was the one that I... So you said you used LP Ripper?
I used something called Mega MP3 splitter.
Okay. I don't know if this might do it. There is a piece of software called LP Ripper, which is designed to listen to an audio file and break it into individual audio files based on a space between, like, if you were to record an album and you want to record an album with multiple songs on it to an MP3, since it would listen for that, that would split it. And I think it had some controls on it, but I don't know and I don't even know if that's compatible with the more modern operating systems. You have, the same internet that might have told you whether or not Minnie Riperton wrote that song or not would also tell you about MP3 rippers out there. Have you done any searches on it?
Not rippers, splitters.
Splitters.
Yeah, I've looked at, tried a few of them, and I did find one that worked, but they want a fee for it. I'm looking for one that's free. I'll buy that one if I have to, but I'm looking for one that's free.
Do you check out MP3 SPLT on SourceForge?
We can. What we're going to do here is, I don't think any of us have used one in a long time or ever. So I don't have one that I can say, oh yeah, here's the program you need. What you're going to do is what we do on the air is just go onto Google and search for MP3 editors, because editors give you a wider variety of tools. And a lot of these software companies, they may not offer them for free. And with music editing software, it gets really tough to find an editor that will work for free. A lot of times they'll just let you have most of the functionality, and then they'll say if you like what it does, then you'll pay for it to get the fully featured version of it. Now, Barrett's referencing, it looks like it's open source.
Yeah, it's current. They've got a long update tree, 2 years. So
it's called MP3 SPLT.
Yeah, it'll split up stuff based on, lulls and play and stuff like that. So if you've got, like one solid track of a CD, it'll actually try and go in there. It'll actually look up CDDB entries and name it for you. So try and make some guesses. And then there's Audacity. If you want to go the direction that Jay was talking about and actually get, a free editor, Audacity is a free editor, and it'll run on Windows, too.
Wow. I try that. Okay. Thank you, then.
All right, thanks for your call.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Audacity. The one trick with it is that you just can't get Audacity. You also have to download the lame.dll, mm-hmm. if you're working, I think, either in the Mac or the Windows version.
Yeah, you do, because that's the non-free part. MP3 is right. Still kind of non-free, so it doesn't ship with Audacity. I think Audacity's native file is Ogworbis.
Right.
But, yeah, that's pretty easy. You get a plug-in, and you're good to go.
Right.
Did you have something, Pete?
Could, it would be worth trying is VLC.
VLC?
Simple, just, you know, editing something to be whatever length it is you want on it and exporting the pieces in MP3. I think I've used VLC for little simple things like that in the past.
Okay. And that's Victor, Lima, Charlie?
Mm-hmm. The all-purpose video player. It's a good kind of Swiss Army knife media player to have around anyway.
Okay. Cool. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Groovehouse is standing by to screen your call and get you all ready and prepped to be on the air with us. He's done that to three people. We'll do two left in the queue right now. Lots of open lines.
My prep is good.
His prep is good.
His all right. Prep foo is strong.
My prep
foo
is
strong. He's a preppy. Look at that Izod shirt he's wearing.
Really, Camper? Jay?
Huh?
Really?
Really? You and members only. I hope she's listening. That'll be just make her day. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Our Biff.
Where did that come from?
I don't know.
All of a sudden, I got my topsiders on. And
I know. Groovehouse is the most bohemian amongst us.
Your Coca-Cola Ray-Bans.
Yes, exactly.
So, in my mind, it's just funny to take the opposite from that.
It's good.
Are you wearing Birkenstocks?
No.
Okay. What kind of shoes do you wear, Groovehouse? Nikes?
I think they're Echo.
Echo.
Yeah.
You don't have those monkey feet shoes like Barrett has, do you?
No. Toe shoes.
Toe shoes?
Yeah, it says,
tofu shoes?
ECCO.
Echo shoes.
Echo.
They're just walking shoes.
All right.
Yep.
Well,
nothing fancy.
So that's your Groovehouse fashion update. Just driving through town. Groovehouse, who's up next?
Oh, goodness. Up next on the show, we're going to speak with John.
John, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, good evening. A funny thing happened to me the other day when I opened my email inbox. All 150 of my emails have disappeared. Is there any way I can get the darn things back?
What mail program are you using?
Beats me. It's Outlook Express. Is that?
Yeah, Outlook Express is an email program. Now, do you have any? You only had 150 emails?
Yeah, on the inbox. Now, my deleted file folder still has all of those. My sent folder is still full. But the inbox of the last 4, 5, 6 months of emails, they're gone.
There are a couple of things that could have happened. One is Outlook Express has a number of different view settings that you can set on different folders. Where one of them is where it will hide any messages that have already been read, so you don't see your inbox. So sometimes you have to fiddle with the view settings to make sure you're viewing all messages.
Okay.
And who do you get your mail from?
I'm Comcast Internet.
So is your email address at comcast.net?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Okay, so Comcast also offers a web version to get to their email, so you can see if your messages are still on the server in case something happened. But if you Google search... If you Google search missing email Outlook Express, there's a Microsoft support article that talks about Outlook Express email messages are missing from the inbox folder. It's a problem that can happen. Sometimes it says here, the symptoms, when you start Outlook Express, the contents of your inbox folder may be missing. The contents may be replaced with a new first run welcome Outlook Express message or something like that, blah, blah, blah. It says it can happen if you use McAfee Virus Scan. Do you use McAfee?
No, sir.
No? They say it could cause by... Do you use any kind of antivirus?
Webroot. Can't think of the name.
Well, anyway, they indicate that McAfee is one of the causes of the problem. I imagine that means that other antivirus programs could cause the problem. Because what happens in Outlook Express is you have a database file for your inbox that has the information about what messages are there. And if that gets corrupted or something, then it may not show you the messages. Let's see. This one here is talking about updating your virus scan, so I don't think that's going to be the solution to your problem. Do you think, is there any chance that you deleted them or moved them to another folder?
No, sir. I just opened it the other day as normal, and bang, they were gone.
And you've rebooted since you noticed this problem?
Yes, sir, and I'm just getting a trickle of new ones.
Okay.
So it's still working. Now, you said a web server from Comcast?
Yeah, Comcast has a webmail version. If you have not configured your Outlook Express to delete mail from the server, what happens when your mail comes in, it comes into a mail server at Comcast, and then you get online and you connect with Outlook, and it looks at that server and it pulls that mail down to your client onto your computer.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on, most people that I know don't configure their email program to delete mail from the server after it's done that. So sometimes you can either set up a new email program and re-download all your mail, or you can use the web interface that the company provides and go see your messages there. So that might be an option to retrieve your mail. And it's going to be something like, the web address would be something like mail.comcast.net. You would just log in with your username and password. Let's see, Outlook Express. Email items may be missing. It can occur if mail and contacts DBX files corrupted when the DBX files being. When you use Outlook Express, did you ever get those messages that Outlook needs to compress your mailbox?
Yes.
Do you let it do that?
Yes.
And is there any chance that you may have interrupted that process when it was doing it one time?
As a matter of fact, and I don't recall, I got that message, and I think, I can't remember if I did it before all these disappeared or after. I wouldn't have done it after because I would have had it open, wouldn't it? But no, I didn't interrupt it.
Sometimes you can, if you're compressing your mailbox, it can, and you shut down Outlook Express while it's doing that, it can cause a problem. Also, another thing that can happen is if the inbox file gets too big, if it's more than a gig in size, depending on how much mail you downloaded. But I found an article. If you search for Microsoft article 918069, KB 918069. 918-069.
Yes, sir.
There's an article on about that talks about how you might be able to retrieve missing email. But other than that, I would say, put together some searches, Google searches or internet searches on missing email Outlook mm-hmm. Express. And there's a number of different articles that talk about things that can cause that and ways that you might be able to retrieve that.
So, in your opinion, they might still be in my PC somewhere.
Yes, I think that they might still be there. I think what has probably happened is that your inbox has gotten corrupted in a way that's not able, so the Outlook Express is not able to display the contents of your inbox, but that those messages might still be there. Even if you have gone so far as to accidentally have selected them all and deleted them,
mm-hmm.
Outlook Express doesn't really delete them when you do that. If you Google search recover deleted email Outlook Express, then there's a way to actually go back and get all your deleted messages from Outlook Express if you've deleted them and you haven't compressed since you deleted it. They're still there.
Oh boy. Well, in my deleted folders, they are not there.
Okay. This is even if you've gone so far as deleted them and emptied your deleted items folder, you can still recover mail in Outlook Express. I'm not saying that that's what happened, but
mm-hmm.
but there's a very good chance you can recover it. If for some reason you can't recover it, talking about the web server is if you can go to the webmail client, basically most internet providers provide you with the ability to check your email from a web browser. So you go to what they call webmail
mm-hmm.
for Comcast, and if all of your mail is there when you go to via the web, then you know that at least there's a copy of your messages still on the Comcast servers. And if that's the case, then what you can do is you can either install another mail program and configure it, and it'll pull all of those messages down, every single one of them. There might be more than 150 there, and have all your mail, or you can set up a new profile in Outlook Express and pull them all down.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, it's a lot of information, but start with that article that I sent you to.
Yes, sir.
And then the second thing you can try to do, again, is if that doesn't work, try. And you can call Comcast and get on phone with their tech support and say, how do I access webmail for Comcast? And, okay. they'll tell you.
Okay. One other little quick question. I'm thinking about buying a new laptop with Windows 7. Naturally, it does not have an email client. Which one would you all recommend? Probably
Gmail. The one that everybody talks about is Windows Live Mail. Is what most PC users tend to gravitate towards.
They don't call it that anymore.
No,
it's just Windows Mail.
Just Windows Mail.
Windmail.
It's free. It's Windows Mail, not Windmail.
Okay.
But Windows Mail. It's is it part of the Live suite?
Windows
still?
Essentials. Yes.
Windows Essentials.
Yes.
But you could also there's plenty of free email programs out there. Thunderbird is still around.
I hear y'all talk about Gmail quite often.
Well, Gmail is primarily, I mean, it's another mail provider like Comcast is, and primarily it's accessed via the web, but you can configure a mail client to connect to it, but it is not it's not mail software, it is a mail service.
Mm-hmm.
So you would get a Gmail account.
Yes, sir.
They're very handy to have. That way, if you ever left Comcast, you still have all your mail.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right, thank you for your call.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Trying to see what the webmail address is for Comcast. I'm sure they have one. Yes, it's xfinity.comcast.net/webmail, and you can check your email via the web for Comcast. All right, well, we didn't have any other calls coming. We do have one more in the queue, but... Phone number 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight here on Technology Bites. 713-526-KPFT and the groovy groove house will make it pleasant for you. If he doesn't spend most of the phone call griping about the way we treat him.
I'll do my best to prep you for the show.
He'll do a good job. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
Up next, we're going to speak with JT.
JT, you're on the Aero Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, how are you?
Excellent, guys. Like I said, I was talking to Groovehouse earlier, man. My wife just got an iPhone 5, and we have Verizon. And she's already got the data plan and everything like that. But when she comes home, she would like to connect to our Linksys wireless router in the house.
Uh-huh.
And we're having issues with it connecting. And I checked the web, and there's other people saying they're having problems with the iPhone connecting with the Linksys wireless network. For some reason, no matter if you have the password right and everything right, it won't connect. I was wondering if you guys had any suggestions.
How old is the router?
I would say it's about three and a half years old.
Do you know what the model number is?
It's... the W4 bra. you guys caught me.
W452G, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, if it's a WRT54G, yeah, that one does have probably. Is it a new iPhone or an older iPhone?
It's the brand new iPhone 5.
iPhone 5? Yeah.
I will say that I have the Linksys, the dual band 4200 at home, and I have the iPhone 5, and it connects up just
yeah,
fine.
The newer one does fine. Also, have you run, there's an update for the iPhone 5, a software update that's available. Have you installed the latest, that update? It came about a week or so ago.
You know, and that's interesting, because she just got the phone last Friday.
All right, you should go into the settings and go into the software update in the settings. Mm-hmm. And see if there's an update waiting for you there. There was an update release that fixes Wi-Fi connection issues.
And that's probably the reason.
Yes, if she hadn't done it, your chances are if she just got it last week, it probably does not have that patch on it, so you need to run that.
Oh, okay, cool. And just to make sure, the MAC address on the iPhone, is it really the Wi-Fi address or the Bluetooth address?
It's the Wi-Fi address.
It's right. Okay.
Are you doing MAC address filtering on your router?
You know, and I have that, and I already put the number in. I just want to make sure that I put the right one.
Well, one thing, that being said, if you have tightened the security screws too tight on your router, that's not a bad thing. I'm all in favor of, you know, securing it. But what you might do is loosen those screws a little bit and see if the iPhone 5 can make an association with the wireless router. And then go back in and enable the security you want to use.
Okay.
Because maybe you are missing. Maybe you're missing something. Maybe you got, I mean, I haven't done MAC address filtering in a long time. That's a very long, crazy set of numbers and letters you have to type in to make that happen. And it's possible that the iPhone 5 is not broadcasting its MAC address in a way that the router is expecting. I don't know if that's possible, but it's feasible.
If you're using the WPK, TSK, or whatever the tradition, the very good encryption for it, you kind of don't need that.
Right.
On a modern router. You don't really don't need MAC filtering necessarily.
Yeah,
on a router. But Jay's right. Turn that off first. Turn that feature off and try just connecting and see if you can connect without that. But you should definitely check for that software update.
Okay, I'll do that.
And by the way, one thing about that update, it does two things. There's actually two updates for the iPhone 5. Apparently, there's a problem downloading updates. So what happens is when you go there, it will actually install a little app that will appear on your desktop that will then automatically run and get the rest of the update. That update then fixes the downloading problem, so you don't really have to worry about it. But it looks a little odd because it installs an app on your desktop that then vanishes after the update causes the phone to reboot.
Okay.
So that's normal when you see that.
Okay, great. And in order to get the update, I first do what?
You go into the settings. And in settings, you go to general, and there's a software update item in there.
Okay.
And it'll walk you through.
All right. Well, thank you very much, guys.
All right. Thank you for your call.
All right.
All right. Bye. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us, we've got about 7 minutes before the top of the hour break that we have to take, but I'm sure we could get a call or two in there, and if not, we'll put you on hold and bring you on the second hour. Are we Barrett timing tonight?
Yeah, we can do that.
Awesome. So, got a regular old enjoyable Technology Bites here going, and all we need is some calls. We've had some good calls tonight. We welcome you to call in at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Why am I not running my IRC client? That's just ridiculous.
I went to the mall.
You went to the mall? Yes, you did. And it turned you into a tweet storm. I mean, there must have been at least half a dozen tweets from you during your trip to the mall.
I hate the mall.
He hates the mall more than he hates tweeting, apparently. So he had to tweet his hate. Tweet hate.
Which mall?
The Galleria.
Can you check in at Cinnabon?
No, there was actually a conversation about Cinnabon in my tweeting.
Yes, there was. There
I'm going to go hit up Twitter.
Yeah, you should get on Twitter more often, Barrett.
Is it fun? People go there?
Yeah.
Is it caught on?
Well, you know.
Will he delete if he uses it?
Well, the thing about Barrett is you're remarkably hard to get a hold of digitally. I mean,
ninja-like.
I don't think it's ninja-like. But, you know, it's like it's always like a crapshoot if you're going to respond to something, send an email, don't see it.
Pretty good about email. Twitter, I showed up
tweet
tonight.
Tweet at you, don't tweet. Well,
the tweeting stuff, yeah, that's what I fall behind on. I see it later.
Facebook, you're more active anymore on Facebook than I recall. That's been kind of a bonus, kind of. All right. So I see that Groovehouse is actually screening some calls here tonight so I can stop picking on my co-host.
Yay.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
All right, up next, we're going to speak with Andy.
Andy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. I enjoy your show. Thank you. I listen to it every Wednesday. I have a PC, and it has XP as the operating system. My son wanted to learn how to use the Ubuntu Linux software, and so he installed it. And it partitioned off about 200 gigabytes of hard drive. Anyway, bottom line is that he decided, yeah, whatever he wanted to do with it wasn't what he wanted to do. And so he uninstalled it. And now I cannot even get into my XP, my Windows. Little information is, you know, when he installed it, you had to select, when you booted up, it gave you a selection of either XP or one of the Linux products. But if you didn't select XP, it defaults to one of Linux. So now that he's uninstalled all the Linux, I get an error. And let me just tell you what this is. I'm looking at the PC. It's like a DOS prompt. It says
it's loaded up a bootloader called Grub, which allows you to choose between the two operating systems,
right?
And depending on how you remove the one operating system, hopefully I guess he probably didn't remove Grub, but he might have. So you don't have any option to load up the Windows partition?
Not at this point. No, I don't. And can I give you just one more information? This is an easy out. It's about a 5-year-old PC. So if you tell me to buy a new one, it's not gonna break my heart. We have a lot of other stuff loaded on here, games and stuff. So it'd be nice to be able to access the.
Well, the cool thing is that regardless of what happens, you can get access to the files on that drive. If you get that drive connected to. You know, an external enclosure or something like that, you'd be able to browse the file system and get your files off of it.
Can you do a /MBR?
I don't know if that's going to fix this situation or not. /MBR
on F disk.
Yeah, you'd have to get something that has Windows F disk on the machine to run F disk /MBR.
It would just fix the master boot record if it's there.
But it sounds like it's not an MBR. Problem because it's actually pulling up Grub, right? Are you actually getting the Grub prompt?
Yes, it looks like a DOS prompt.
Yeah.
Is it a square box though? Or is it erroring out before it gets into Grub?
It says error, yes.
Okay.
See, Grub should give, well, depending on if it wasn't messed with, Grub should give you 3 to 5 seconds with a list of different things you can boot into. And if it in the past it let you choose, it should still give you that option. But if you don't hit enter, it might default to Linux and
then break.
Load it because it's not there in the partition.
Right. So when you first fire it up, does it give you any option to? So you don't see the option you had previously where you could choose the OS, right?
That is correct.
And you're watching it. I'm
looking at it right now. Yeah.
I mean, when you watch it as it's booting up and see what screens you get, it's not like timing out and trying to automatically go to Linux or something.
Exactly. It gives you the F2 setup or F12.
Right.
You know, that's the only two things you can do.
Well, one option you might have would be to get that Ubuntu disk back and reinstall it.
Uh-huh.
And that should put the bootloader back up.
It comes with Grub, right?
It'll install it. It'll give you the choice. Right. You just go back through the processes you originally went to install Ubuntu and reinstall it.
We can do that. I have that disk.
Just be careful you don't overwrite the partition where you have your data.
Yeah.
Put it back in the original place. And that should get you back to your bootloader. And then you can get access to your files and then you can go buy a new computer.
Thank you for your help. I appreciate it. I was just looking for an excuse.
I would say go buy one.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, all right. Thanks for your call.
System VirtualBox.
Yes. You know, after the fact, after you've already kind of blown it up, the better way to do that would be to run the operating system you want to experiment as a virtual machine or even from a live CD where you just boot into it from the disk, and that way you don't touch the hard drive.
Yeah, all he wanted was an excuse to go get a new computer.
All right, isn't it time? Don't we have to do something?
Where's Groovehouse?
Yeah.
Where's Flicted?
Flicted.
Where's our engineer?
All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Views.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after this.
This is KPFT Program Director Ernesto Aguilar with two brief announcements. First, thank you so much for your pledges of support during this recent membership campaign. If you committed to mailing your pledge, please make sure to keep an eye out for your envelope in the mail, and please make sure to send in your check. If you have questions about thank you gifts, please call our membership office at 713-526-4000 during business hours. Also, the Pacifica National Board will soon be voting on amendments to our bylaws. Visit pacifica.org for a complete list of bylaws amendments, as well as contact information for the Pacifica National Board if you have opinions you'd like to share about the proposed bylaws amendments. Again, the Pacifica.org. And if you didn't get a chance to pledge during this recent membership campaign, visit KPFT.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett. What's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Yeah. That means it's time for...
Barrett time!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. With the first Tuesday following the first Monday in the month of November firmly behind us, it's time to start asking ourselves, as Americans, the really tough questions. Like, what am I going to do now that all the constant onslaught of opinionated political punditry has abated? However you feel about the outcome of the election, TXRX Labs, the Houston hackerspace, has something to salve your soul and take up some of your newfound free time. I guess I'll address the losing side first. Since the collapse of our national infrastructure is imminent, you may want to consider bike tech, beginner and intermediate maintenance. There's also a class on wheel truing, or the art and science of spoke tension reading and adjustment. Wheel alignment, hub adjustment, and proper flat repair will also be covered. For those not affected by the outcome of the election, know that a working bicycle will be a solid asset to have during the impending zombie outbreak. Now to the winners. You're going to need to work both sides of the aisle if you want to get anything done. It's going to be about compatibility, agility, and working quickly. Of course, I'm talking about learning JavaScript. Not to be confused with just Java, JavaScript started out life in the Netscape browser as ECMAScript and is used extensively to program client-side web apps. But in order for JavaScript to get anything done in the next 4 years, it's going to have to start working with the other side of the house on the server. Once you get some basic JavaScript down, you'll be able to apply that to Node.js, a language that opens up the power of server-side processing. On a side note, what could arguably be called Web 2.0 is finally home with webplatform.org, a standard site sponsored by the W3C, Microsoft, Google, Adobe, Nokia, and a few other heavy hitters of the tech industry. If you happen to have an interest in web development but can never figure out how to tie HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and JSON together, this could be your next new bookmark. And finally, libertarians, you're left with the class Calculus for the Practical Person. At least you'll be better equipped to keep up with Ron Paul's math. And for those of you who voted robot, there's Intro to the Arduino, the small open hardware microprocessor that allows you to create all kinds of electronic amusements with which to appear our soon-to-be new robotic overlords. Most of the classes I just named take place this Saturday or Sunday at TXRX Labs. You'll need to register online at www.txrxlabs.org as class space is limited. Did I leave anybody out, politically wise?
What about the Green Party?
Oh, I did leave someone out. I got the Illuminati. No,
nobody voted for the Green Party.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Especially, I guess, in Texas. I'm guessing that everything's going according to plan as far as the Illuminati goes. You can just kick back and attend the Houston Area Apple Users Group talk on digital photography next Saturday, November 17th. Talk takes place at the City of Bel Air at 7008 South Rice Avenue. Special interest group meetings kick off at 9 a.m. with the main presentation starting at 11. Hit www.haaug.org for details and directions. It's also important to note that this is the month of Movember. That's Mo is a mustache. Many men will also be growing them this month in an effort to raise awareness about some important men's health issues. It's also a good excuse just to grow a Mo. Hit Movember.com for more info. That's it for your post-election depression survival guide. And that's that for Barrett time.
Addendum time! Addendum time!
Actually,
apparently Barrett did not get the email that I sent.
Oh, what
addendum time! Addendum time!
After I just said I always get emails.
Yeah, this is one of the things I complain about. So it didn't have time.
All right.
Startup weekend is, I think it is this weekend.
Oh, is it this weekend?
It's, yes, it's Houston. It's Startup Weekend returns to Houston for a fifth time this November 9th through 11th. Do you want to take a guess what day of the week that is? That's me trying to be Barrett and throw a quiz in.
Catterday.
All right, November 9th through 11th, it will be hosted at the Houston Technology Center in Midtown. Startup weekends are a 54-hour event. 54-hour event. Wow. Where software developers, designers, marketers, product manager, and startup enthusiasts come together to share ideas, form teams, build products, and launch mobile or web technology startups. So, startup weekends are a weekend-long hands-on experience where entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs can find out if startup ideas are viable. On average, half of startup weekends attendees have technical or design backgrounds. The other half have business backgrounds. The fee to attend the event, they can learn about this online. They will be providing three meals for the run of the day. You can check them out at their website. It is houston.startupweekend.org, just the way it sounds. No www, just houston.startupweekend.org. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/Houston Startup Weekend, or Twitter, it's SW Houston. And go online, find out more information. I know a lot of the people that are involved in this event, and they're good people. And they were a lot of the people that were ahead of the curve on the whole social media thing, and it's good fun. So if you're interested in learning about potential startups or trying to talk to people about ideas you have for a technology startup, might be the thing to go to.
Once you've gone through 54 straight hours of staying up, coding, drinking Red Bull, and eating Cheetos, you can go straight into Houston Beer Week.
Beer Week?
Which is, yeah, the
letter. Addendum time, addendum time. Flicked, it's got an addendum.
So it's going on just randomly, you know. At the last day, I think, is craft beer festival or something.
Is there like a site somewhere, or is it just kind of just general knowledge?
There's a craft beer, craft week, I don't know.
In our Beer Texas kinda, blog.
Yeah, if you just kind of search Houston Beer Week.
We have a lot of stuff on it.
And then you just kind of have to follow the Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts and stuff of like a lot of the local breweries and
yeah, go to
HoustonBeerWeek.com.
There you go.
HoustonBeerWeek.com.
I don't know why they had to make it so obtuse.
They should have called it Cinnabon Revenge.
So you had said that nobody votes green in Texas.
Yeah, why did you say that?
That's not true. According to the Secretary of State's office, during the election yesterday, 24,450 voters cast their ballots for the Green Party candidate for president. And this is interesting. In the Senate race, where Ted Cruz won, 67,791 votes for David B. Collins, the Green Party candidate for Senate. So,
well, by people, I meant corporations. Actually, Flick said that.
Oh, all I stand corrected.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight.
I was just going to see if I could, you know, get some political calls.
Stir up some trouble.
Yeah, since we haven't had any political discussions in a long time.
Careful. We're going to be off the air next week, so someone could get upset and then have to wait two whole weeks to talk to us and tell us how we messed up.
Careful what you wish for.
That could be painful for them.
I don't think I want to engage the listeners of this radio station in a political discussion. Just don't want to go there.
Afflicted's just stirring.
He's an instigator.
Vote robot.
He's like Woody Woodpecker.
You remember when he inflamed the entire Houston foodie community against us?
He's a troublemaker.
He is. And, you know, he doesn't put himself in a position to receive the wrath.
Here come the calls.
713-526-5738. We love foodies, sort of. Remember, I came up with the new word, voties. People are Instagramming their ballots.
Which in Texas is not.
Probably it's illegal. It is illegal.
If they do it right after the fact, right? What if once you leave?
No, you cannot take a picture
inside
who's
of the voting site.
Who's enforcing
the voting area? Well, if anybody is, you can find a stream of them on Instagram, and it has their username, and I'm sure he could subpoena. So we could probably void this whole election.
Do you think we would? You would have the legal right to like punch somebody if they were taking it? Because I'm going to start looking for people taking pictures.
No, right. that's another crime.
Yeah, but it's so, like kind of like an eye for an eye.
I looked at the I looked at the law yesterday. I was tweeting about this from the Chronicle account, and I looked at the law for it, and the law says it is forbidden to, but it doesn't say what punishment there is. I think it's basically it's a requirement that the election judge, if they spot it, essentially ask you to not do it is basically what it is. But you cannot also have it use a wireless communications device, as it's described, within 100 feet of a voting station. That means a smartphone.
No, right.
Or a cell phone, actually.
Does that passively checking data while it's in your pocket, does that count?
No, because you're not using it. It's using itself.
Ooh.
But what about, like, if you have information that you want to look up, like about what?
In some cases, election judges have stopped you from doing that with the smartphone at the so like having the list of the candidates you wanted to vote for, looking at it on this based on this law, using this within 100 feet of a voting station is illegal.
But what if it's not actually transmitting? What if it's local to the
airplane?
That's not what it says. It says you can't use it. That's what the law says.
Yeah, but if it means to use it as a wireless device, then you're not.
That's what your attorney is for.
All right, 713-526, never mind. 713-526-KPFD. We have a ton of calls in the queue now, so we're cooking with gas.
Uh-oh.
Who's up, Groovehouse?
Flame the foodies some more. Up next, we're going to speak to Jack.
Oh, it's not that Jack.
I don't know.
Mr. Box, hello? Jack, you're on the air. Hello?
He's in his box.
Is it turned up? Is it on?
Yeah.
Jack! Oh, wow.
Nope. His last name may have been McDonald. Oh, no.
Oh.
Which did I hit? Yeah. Well, I'm going to put him on hold.
All right. Groovehouse, our number one call hung up. Now we got his, whoa.
I'm not touching anything.
Everything's going to hell in a handbasket. 713-526-5738. I hope the phones still work. That would be important. 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight here on Technology.
Yeah, the phones are okay.
Do you? Okay. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Blake.
Blake, you're on the air.
Thank you, guys. Question about Google Chromebooks. Need to do two things with them. Not sure if they're capable of doing it or not. So, one, I understand it works great if you're into the whole Google world, Google Docs, and all of that. If I wanted to work offline somewhere where I don't have a Wi-Fi connection or I'm not connected via 3G, as I understand it, a Google Chromebook will work offline in creating, say, a Google Doc. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. So second question is if I plug a thumb drive into the USB port on the back of this thing, I've got a Word document on there, will that Chromebook open that document and read it?
I don't know. It may have to be connected. I'm not sure.
Okay. So, because that's the differentiator on whether I buy one of these or not.
Have you used the Google to look it up?
I have tried. Apparently, I'm not that smart.
Well, let's see what
happens. So, the question is whether or not you can save a Google Doc locally, or
no. That I know you
whether
can
you can
do.
Read
my
it.
My question
and work
is
on
this:
it.
Let's if I am offline with my Chromebook and I pop a thumb drive into it that's got a Word document saved on it, a Microsoft Word document saved on it, will it open that in an offline manner?
Have you tried taking your computer offline and see if you could do it on your computer? I would imagine maybe not. Don't you have to be logged into Gmail to access Google Docs in any capacity?
No, there has a, there's a, it has a feature that lets you on the Chrome, in the Chrome OS, in the latest Chromebooks, lets you work offline in Google Docs.
It's kind of like the Microsoft briefcase.
Correct.
Okay, so then it, when you get back online, then it synchronizes back to the server.
Yep.
Right.
I'm looking at some at reviews of it, and it does not appear. Yes, you can. Yes. Yes, you can.
Word, James Word off
James Kendrick's review of the new Chromebook. If you do a Google search that says, for yes, you can use the new Chromebook offline, James Kendrick from ZDNet, and he writes about this. So, yes.
Okay, so great. So you can do it. So you guys got an opinion one way or another on this new Chromebook?
I have played with the generation before this one that was released.
You had the first ones that came out,
it was the middle one. It's kind of the middle one.
Oh, okay.
And they're very good. There are limitations, and you know, you are essentially working with the apps that are available online and some of this offline. So long as you are aware of that, for $249, it's a pretty good deal. I think it's a good second notebook or a good travel notebook. Whether it could be your primary notebook, I don't know.
I'm looking for a travel notebook for a history professor for a Christmas present. I'm dealing with someone that's, I wouldn't go so far as to call him a technical Luddite, but not far from it. And all they really want to do is document processing, web browsing, and some email. Sounds perfect for that.
Yes.
And this is not a power user, guys.
Right.
So, yeah.
The only thing is that if, and again, I haven't used this, but if there are any tricks you have to pull or configurations or tweaks you have to do to use some of this offline mode, that might be a problem if they have a difficulty learning that. But it was very simple to use, and if they can use Gmail and use Google Docs, they shouldn't have a problem.
I've managed to do it with a MacBook in the old briefcase, and then I've done through my Gmail account now on a MacBook working with Google Docs, and it seems to be pretty straightforward stuff.
Okay.
So, all right. Thank you very much for your help.
All right. Thank you for your call.
All right. Bye now.
Bye. Google Docs. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us. Remember, we won't be here next week.
What?
So unless your problem can wait.
What are we going to do on Wednesdays? On Wednesday.
We go back to Cones. Have like a spontaneous mini midweek.
I can go to bed before midnight on a work night where I have to wake up at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock the next morning and go to work.
It will be Houston Beer Week.
That's what I need to do. Just drink a lot of beer on a Wednesday night. Are you going to have the lowdown? You're going to run a shuttle for us?
a sidecar?
I'll set up a spreadsheet of like all the events.
Okay. And Barrett's going to have scooters for everyone.
All right.
Yeah.
You just have to push them.
I would say between Barrett and myself, I think we might have all of us covered.
Wow. It would be a gang. A geek gang.
Yes, Hell's Geeks. All right. Who's up next, Groovehouse?
Let's see. Okay. How's this work? Okay. what are we doing here? All right, radio show.
Hello.
Hello. All right, up next, we're going to speak to Rajiv.
Rajiv, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, yes. I had a question about the Clonezilla. I had used it to back up a couple of my computers, and when it came to wanting to restore it, it seems to think that not all the files or whatever it backs up, the package that it makes, all the files associated with that package don't seem to be there. And I was wondering if what I saw comparing a couple of packages, that the package I'm trying to restore is missing a few of the files. I was just wondering if I could recreate them in any way. Because the main compressed data seems to be still there.
Yes, but you're missing a couple of files that have would have had data.
It seems to be comparing to, you know, I just started comparing packages when it started complaining about this package not being complete. So that's why I say that there's something missing. I was wondering if there's any way to recover that backup.
I don't know if there's a way to recover it or not. It depends on... I would say maybe, probably not. I would say probably not. But does CleanZilla create a series of cabinet files or?
It seems to have one tar file with several text files, and it seems the ones that I'm missing are the text files.
And the text files are going to be what tells CleanZilla what to do with the tar file in terms of maybe a file list or a directory structure or something. I don't know for sure what that would be. Have you tried doing another CloneZilla of anything else and taking a look at the contents of the text file?
Yeah, that's what I've been trying to do and trying to decipher them all. It is not real clear to me. I was just wondering if there was a way I could take the package and recreate the text files from the package.
Have you ever used tar? Are you familiar with that program?
No, I'm not directly familiar with tar.
So it looks like what CloneZilla is there are two types of files that you're going to have in there. You're going to have what's called a tarball. And if you're familiar with like WinZip, like a zipped file,
yes.
It's the same thing, only it's a little bit older and it's from the Unix/Linux world. So that's going to control all your files. The text files, if you're missing any text files for CloneZilla, it looks like those are going to contain the partition information. So what it means is you've lost like all the information about the disk geometry and like, you know, what to put, what direction. Where, but I don't think you lost any of your actual data.
Right.
So if you boot into like Ubuntu, or if you can get like a bootable Linux machine,
that machine is still bootable with Linux. It has Linux on it, and it's still bootable.
What you can do now, it's going to be a pretty big file, but you can do tar, and you can do XVF, which is extract, verbose, and file, and then the name of the tar file you want to, and it's going to take everything that's in that file and put it right there. And if there happens to be a .tar.gz on that file, do you know if it's tar or just tar.gz?
No, I don't know if it's tar or just tar.gz. I don't remember the
GZ. If there's a GZ, just do gunzip. And then the file name, and then just after that, then the tar XVF, and then the file name.
Gunzip.
Gunzip.
Or you can actually do an X.
Yes, G-unzip.
G-unzip, yeah.
G-unzip.
I usually just do an XF.
But gunzip also works.
Yeah, unzip will probably work too. But point is, it's a tarball. You can get the data out of there. You just lost all your partition information.
Or if you do tar.
Oh, okay. So I just lost the partition information. There's no way to regain that anyway. That you know of.
Well,
unless you know how to hand write out file geometry or disk geometry, and
it uses Gparted. It uses like off the shelf open source things like tar and like gzip and like parted to actually do that stuff. But the text files that you lost, the only text files that I'm seeing reference here to are what stores like, hey, he had this partition named this, it was this big, you know, started this sector. That's what you lost. You didn't lose your data. So you can go back in and repartition and then just copy the data back in there.
Yeah, I mean, what you're going to lose is, it sounds to me like you have a tar file that has all of your data in it. And if you if you untar it or unzip it, it's just going to lay out all those files and probably the folders. But you lose things like boot partition information. If you did a backup that captured the whole system that was designed for you to be able to restore the whole system back to a bootable computer, you've lost that. But you might be able to just take that and just unzip it onto a drive and just have all your files, documents, and music, your operating, whatever you backed up.
Right. Maybe I explain one more step, and you might be able to walk me one step further. This machine had both a Linux partition and a Windows partition, and the partition I've lost is the Windows one. The Linux still boots fine. Is there any chance, if I know the size and area of the Windows partition, can I just unzip all the Windows files back into their place and it would run?
No.
You're going to have to recreate like a fat like a FAT16 or a FAT32 or whatever you're using for your Windows partition. But okay. Chances are good, though, that in that tarball, if you backed up the entire system...
Yes, I did.
...from CloneZilla, then there's probably going to be a folder called C, and then maybe Windows underneath that, and that's where your Windows partition files are going to be.
Yeah, you'll have... your partition files will be on the partition. They'll be at the root. But you'll have you can have C:\Windows and have all your operating system files, but it wouldn't boot because
it wouldn't boot. But it's not going to boot. But your files are still there.
But if you take the partition that you have and you make it bootable,
right?
Like you sys the disk, then you can untar that onto it and it might boot. But at this point, I'm thinking that what I would do is rather than struggle to try to handwrite these files or get this system bootable into Windows again is concentrate on saving your files.
Okay.
Get that tar and untar it onto an external hard drive or whatever and just see what you get.
So I can get my files back.
Make a copy of the tar file before you do anything else just so you don't accidentally overwrite anything or blow anything
away. When I did the backup, I did it to an external USB. So it's not on that machine.
Okay, but what could conceivably happen is that you could, on that partition that you have, if I don't know why all the data is gone, there may be a sign of another problem.
It's real strange. I think I did the same operation on two other machines, and I can see a whole set of files.
Right.
And when I try to go in, if I want to restore any one of those, they actually come up in a list when you go through CloneZilla. It actually shows a list of
available. Right, but my point is that I don't know what caused you to lose your partition. And that could be a sign of a problem. So trying to recover that existing partition on the drive where it failed may not be the best course of action. But if it's fine, if the partition's fine or if the drive is fine, what you could conceivably do is reinstall Windows onto that partition. And then take the contents of that tar file and dump them into the corresponding locations back on there. And then you probably would boot up just the way you would expect it to.
Okay.
Assuming that the partition is okay.
Right.
But at this point, I would stop.
Grab the files first.
Yeah. Make sure you got your data.
Right.
Even if you have to just lay it out on another hard drive just to see the files. Forget the operating system. Concentrate on your documents folder and your downloads and your favorites and that sort of thing. Everything else can be reinstalled, but you want to make sure you get those files.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you for your call.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I do not like backups that do it that way.
It just makes it hard.
I prefer to have my files just copied over to another drive so that I can actually take that drive at any time, plug it into a computer, and browse the files. Okay, there's my music. There are my pictures.
Right.
I can then grab them. You can always reinstall the operating system. You can always reinstall your applications. But start getting into these weird things that make these little cabinet files or these archive files of all your data. Then you have to have that program to get them back. Although this sounds like it's a pretty cool open source thing that does just uses a lot of free tools and combines them. All right. So anyway, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. We've got half an hour left in the show, so plenty of time. Some good calls tonight. We appreciate that. But we have time and room on the lines for many more. So participate if you dare. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Yes.
I am here.
Vote robot.
Yes.
Hey, oh. Who's up, Groovehouse?
All right, up next on the show, we're going to speak with Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Just had a quick question. I have an old email address, prodigy.net. And I want to set up a new email address, like a Gmail account, because it's more current. Is it possible for me to, once I set up a new email address, the emails that are coming to that prodigy.net address, can I set up, a shortcut or something so that it'll go to that new email address once I set it up?
I don't know if Prodigy offers a forwarding service or not.
Okay.
They might. So there might be an, if it's something you can access via the web where you can go in and set up a filter that looks at incoming mail and forward it to your new address. Another option, if I recall correctly, and my Gmail experts will chime in if I'm wrong, Gmail has the ability to connect other accounts to it, where it will actually reach out to a Popmail account and get the mail from that and bring it over to Gmail.
That's correct.
Okay.
So if you set up your Gmail account, you go through the process of configuring it to connect to your Prodigy account so you can have your Gmail address and you also have any mail sent to your Prodigy address if it support if Prodigy supports or Gmail supports Prodigy. And I haven't thought about Prodigy.
Yeah, I know it's been a while. So yeah. That's what I was wondering. So once I set up a Gmail account, then that's when I can get that information, try to figure out if I can.
Right, and it doesn't cost you anything to experiment with it.
Okay. All right, well, I was just wondering if that's, like, possible, you know, because, again, you know, you have these old email accounts, the AOL and the, you know, this kind of thing, but you want to go to something new because, you know, the employers or whatever, they like the new email address, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
nobody's going to take you seriously with a Prodigy address.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's kind of cool, actually. I didn't realize that they still had email. Apparently, SBC bought them. So it's actually an AT&T service.
Oh.
Yeah.
And they just maintain the email addresses.
Now, do you,
try
do you
to go
pay
to prodigy.net? There's nothing there.
Do you pay for this email?
No, sir. No, I don't. I mean, it's just that it came with, now, again, it's been a long time. I haven't used it in a while.
Right.
I mean, you know, you just kind of read your email and stuff, but.
No, I was just saying, if it was provided to you through your internet provider or whatever, they could set up a forward on it, possibly, but.
So I might have to get with them so that I can work with them.
There's a site called Red Stamp Mail that actually has step-by-step instructions on setting up Gmail to collect mail from your mailbox at prodigy.net. So it gives you servers and it tells
if you Google
how to
search Google search Gmail Prodigy and there's a, the first link that comes up is configure Gmail to pull mail from prodigy.net. It's at a website called redstampmail.com. But if you just Google search Gmail Prodigy, you'll find it.
That work. I really do appreciate you guys. You guys are doing a tremendous job. I appreciate you. Thank you so
all right.
much.
Thank you for your call. Have a good night.
Okay. All right, you too.
All right, yes. We've got our Google working. Boy, if we didn't have Google, we just wouldn't have a show.
Not true.
We could still use Alta Vista.
And Bing.
Yeah. Gopher.
Like Archie.
I was rewatching that episode of The Simpsons where Lisa created Facebook, or it was actually called Springface or something like that. It was an online social media for the Springfield town. And they actually had a... It was a whole parody of the Facebook story. And it was actually very funny.
I got to see that one.
So who did she steal the idea from?
I forget where who she stole it from. They did have the Winkle twins at the end.
the Winklevi.
The Winklevi. The Winklevises. Yeah. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up? Who's up next? Who's up next that wants to be on the air with us? Who's up next who wants to be on the air with Technology Bites? Who's up next who wants to be on there with the Technology Bites that you screened?
That wants to be up next on the show?
Yeah.
That's going to be Richard.
Richard, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I got a new 256 solid-state drive that I wanted to put into a laptop, see if I could get some better boot speeds and such. What is y'all's best advice for, I guess, I'm going to do a clean install. Should I do multiple partitions or just one solid partition on it? Right now, the system I have has three partitions. It has one of those really small, I guess, like security Samsung partitions,
recovery
and then
maybe?
The other two are normal C and D.
That's not a lot of space. I would just do a single partition unless you're going to have multiple operating systems. But if you're just going to have straight up Windows 7, there's no reason to have multiple partitions on that.
Okay. And then I was probably going to just keep the old drive as is in case something were to happen. I'm hoping that I could just pop it back in and it will just be back in time to whenever I took it out.
Get a little inexpensive hard drive enclosure
And I already have two of those.
Yeah, well, put it in, I mean, a little small one, portable one, and then just when you need it, just plug it into the USB.
Okay, yeah. And then I was planning on doing that just to get any of the data I might have needed from the drive. In fact, I have another one that I already back up to that's a 500 gig. I was just going to throw that into my desktop and build virtual machines for it.
Okay.
Because, like, I haven't played around Windows 8, and I'm kind of skeptical to jump in there yet. So I thought I would do VM Player and try to play around with Windows 8 before I actually install it on my main desktop.
Well, that's a reasonable plan. I know that there should be some updates that allow you to run Windows 8 in a virtual machine. Didn't you have some problems with that initially with Parallels?
Well, that was with the preview version. The one thing to keep in mind about Windows 8, that unlike Windows 7, you don't have a 30-day free period with it. You have to put in a key when you set it up. So don't download it thinking, oh, you can give it a trial in there. You actually will have to buy it.
Okay. Well, I already have a key for it, but does that mean that the key is stuck to the virtual machine then?
So that later if you want to use it on the hardware, what will usually happen is if you do that, you set it up, you run it on the virtual machine, then you move it to the hardware, it may complain and say you need to call Microsoft, but just call them and tell them what you've done. They're pretty lenient when you talk to them on the phone, explain you're going from a virtual machine, you were testing it, to actually putting it on your, and they'll give you a new key.
Okay, because, yeah, I wanted to experiment with some development. I work on computer work, but I have not even touched Windows 8, and I'm kind of, you know, I don't really want to jump fully into it yet.
Well, one of the interesting things about Windows 8 is if you have more than one Windows 8 machine, you can sync settings and desktop wallpaper and in some cases apps across multiple Windows 8 machines, just like you can, say, with smartphones. And that makes it really interesting when you have kind of a whole, you know, the same type of operating system at home as you do at work, or you have multiple machines in the family. So once you try it, if you're interested in that feature, that's what makes it really handy.
Cool. Okay. Well, I appreciate the advice. Yeah, I'll probably just go with one solid partition then. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for your call. All right. So Springface was created by Lisa. She didn't actually steal the idea, but she got the layout idea from Nelson. And instead of the wall, a Facebook wall, they have a spring face floor. And it gets so popular in Springfield that everybody's using it that the city sues her for that. So it says, Lisa is getting tried for creating a social networking site, Springface, which has caused devastation in town. Lisa begins to explain her story. 2 months prior, the family went to town center at Springfield Glen and met Lenny, who had bought a condo. Anyway, it's a great episode of it, and I was trying to think, after this, they have a kind of what happened to everybody at the end, like the end of Animal House. Principal Skinner was convicted of selling hornet honey as bee honey. Mr. Burns received a payment of $35 million, even though he didn't do anything. Great episode, but Springface, look it up, download it, torrent that, baby. I don't know.
Dang.
It's The Simpsons. It's also the episode that has the theme song sung by the Tiger Lilies at the end.
Wow. So that's worth torrenting alone right there.
All right. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to talk to Ed.
Ed, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys. Hey, kind of a old school question. I had some old CDs that are getting kind of crappy, you know, they skip and stuff.
And I want to burn them to vinyl.
I wish. but is there any program or something that'll read through the crap that'll, you know, clean those up?
Yeah, there is some software out there that's designed to reduce.
You know how they stutter and stuff?
Yeah, and you've just cleaned them, right?
Yeah.
You have actually cleaned them. Yeah. There's some CD recovery software. If you Google search CD recovery, that's designed to be able to, but it's mostly, I think, for data. This is data or music. These are music CDs.
Music.
So what did you do? Just not put them in the
cover? Sleeve?
No. Jewel cases. I mean, I look at them and they don't seem to be, you know, too.
Could it be your player?
Excuse me?
Could it be your player?
Well, you know, they'll play on, you know, maybe my boombox, but, or not play on my boombox, but then they'll play on inside.
Okay, so it could be that maybe it's the player. Maybe the boombox needs to be cleaned.
Well, you know, it'll play some, you know, my newer stuff. Anyway, I just wonder if there's any programs. I just want to make sure the FBI could read through it. You know, does.
Well, if the disc is damaged, it's going to be hard to get the music, like, you know, off of it.
Yeah.
But you could conceivably rip the disc. You could conceivably rip the disc and then burn it to a new disc.
Yeah, okay, so it would possibly rip without, that's kind of what I want to do.
It might be worth a shot if you could, you know, but again, like I said, if you have a bunch of CDs doing this, I would tend to think that maybe you have a problem with your players. Maybe you need to clean those.
No, there's only a few that do this. Generally, you know,
only a few discs, few discs that do it?
Yes. And there were like ones I've burned.
Oh, I see.
So
there might be a way to pull that off where you're not actually ripping the disc, but which just pulls the data off of it, lock, stock, and barrel. Is there a software that'll do that and allow you to burn it back to a disc? I don't do a lot of CD burning or anything like that myself.
No, I haven't done that in a long time. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of software out there for editing and playing and you know, messing with music on CD, and you could probably find something that will attempt to clean it up. The problem is that if you're reading it and it's stuttering, that's what it's going to pick up.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so it'd probably be better off just buy some off online.
Now, is all this music legally obtained?
No.
Okay, so maybe it's time for you to go buy it.
Yeah.
Just like
okay.
that Simpsons
yeah.
episode.
Yeah, just like that yeah, Simpsons episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't torrent it anymore. Now, if they're discs that you burn yourself, I can see that. I mean, certainly the do-it-yourself record discs can go bad. I don't know that there's a way to recover the music off. I know there's ways to recover file data off of discs like that because only small portions of the data are corrupted. But if you're talking about data corruption in the middle of a song file or a song, then you can't, like, get... You know, if you had a CD full of files and one of the files was damaged, you could get all the other files and maybe get 98% of your data recovered. With this, you're going to just recover the song with the damaged part in it.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Good luck.
You
music Bye-bye. Thief. All right. 713-526-5738.
I have a...
Yeah, I'm getting a kind of a smoker's throat now, too. So. I hope that Flicton is not contagious.
I don't know if I am or not.
I don't think so.
He's past that. So he was contagious last week when he had a fever.
I have a possible
migraine
question.
What is that?
I have a question. So
one word
on when you get a Mac, does it have the ability to pull all your files and stuff off of a Windows machine? Like, is that an option when you're doing it, or is it only for Macs?
Like, it's just going
to... Like, is there a way for it to connect to a Windows machine?
A Windows migration tool?
Yeah.
Pete, isn't there in OS X? I've never used it, but...
There's the Mac migration tool. I don't recall a Windows migration tool. I mean, you can set it up, or you can share files, and you can just move stuff from one to the other.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly easy because the Windows files are kept in a specific folder, and you can just move them over to your home folder. In both of the MacBooks I've written, I talk about doing that, just kind of putting them on the same network and copying them over. I think that's the simplest thing.
Oh, wait, there actually is a piece of software for Windows Migration Assistant. Version 1.0.1 from July of this year.
From Apple?
Yeah. Software will help you migrate data from a Windows PC running Windows XP, Vista, or Windows 7.
There you go.
Automatic
shortly after it's been installed.
Yeah.
Why do you ask?
I seem to remember that existed, but I had never had a need to do it, so I wasn't sure. I bought a new Mac Mini when they announced the new ones a week or two ago or whenever. So I bought a new one because the one I bought was 2 years old, and it maxed out at 8 gig of memory. And the new ones, when they announced them, they have 16 gig of memory. So I wanted the extra memory because I like to keep like 700 Chrome tabs open. So I'm going to give my old Mac Mini that's 2 years old to my parents.
And you want to get their Windows stuff on?
They have a Windows machine. So I thought if there was a migrator tool that would work well that I could use.
Why would you use a migrator tool as opposed to just copying? Because, I mean, you're not going to be able to migrate the apps, right? You don't need to move over the apps. I mean, the only thing you really need to get are their documents. I don't know what you're going to do with their mail files because you probably won't be able to open those up at anything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know what the migrator tool will do.
Well, a migrator tool is mostly designed to take, you know, to look at your operating system and say, now, if it's a Windows to Windows migration tool, there are some of those that will claim that they will take an installed application from one computer and install it on another computer if you don't have, which is good if you don't have the install disks or something. But in a situation where you're talking about migrating a Windows computer to a Mac, there's not going to be any need to bring those programs over, right? Because they're not going to run on a Mac because they only run on their Windows apps or Windows applications. So you're not going to migrate over the operating system. You're not going to migrate over necessarily the user data that you would have, you know, that configures the desktop and so forth like that. So really, the only thing that you're really going to be interested in is getting all of her pictures, all of their data. All of their pictures, all of their any music files that they have them, and documents. You know, Word documents and spreadsheets or anything like that. And you can; those are all located in the My Documents folder. You grab that. Conceivably, bookmarks. You might be able to migrate those with no problem.
There's actually an app that'll get all this for you. I didn't know this. Made by Apple. It'll run on Windows. It's just called Windows Migration Assistant.
We were talking about
that. Yeah, and there's a whole list of...
But what we were talking about is why you would use a migration tool to migrate...
Yeah, from not having to go into all the different directories and stuff like that. It looks like it actually goes in and pulls over the POP files, pulls over stuff from Outlook, pulls over stuff from all the different mail things, having to go in there and do it yourself. So it looks like it might be a little bit faster.
What I don't know is whether or not it would make any modifications to the mail files into... a format that Mac Mail could deal with.
I would hope so.
So maybe it looks at Outlook Express and says, okay, we can deal with that. We'll bring it over here in Mac.
It knows the format to convert.
And possibly it looks at the configurations for the mail setup and maybe even the Wi-Fi or something like that and brings that over.
I like it.
It says that it brings a POP email account and messages to mail app for the logged in user on the Windows machine.
Yeah, so it'll do the conversion.
Mm. Okay. Well, that would be good.
I like it.
You like it? How much is it? Is it?
I think it's free. Yeah, I wasn't aware that that was the same thing as the Migration Assistant. I thought this was the Windows Migration Assistant. I must have missed the Windows part when you guys were talking about that. Yeah, it looks like it's free.
Wow. All right.
Because they want people to...
They want to make it as easy Windows. As they can.
0.7 or better.
You could go back to the mall and go to the Apple store and talk to a genius.
I don't have to go to the mall to do that. I can just go into Highland Village and not go to any other store.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, he could take the computer and that and have him do it.
But he can sit here and talk to the sub-geniuses, and that's even more fun.
I got called out. This person will catch this on the podcast. I forget where he's listening, but he's... he listens to us on the podcast. He emailed me and he said that he thought the Halloween show was funny and very entertaining, but was surprised that we had not come across an Ethernet USB split cable like your horror story.
Yeah, because they're common.
He says that he had one with his through Verizon or something. And
had AT&T.
He said it made us sound a little out of touch.
Huh. In the big city... Yeah. We've got, everything is Cat 5.
Well, I think it's specific to Westel modem. So if you've run Verizon DSL and you used a Westel modem, then that's probably seen one.
Yeah.
But if you don't work in a field where you work with DSL modems, which I don't,
right?
I have no reason to see them except for my own DSL, which has always been AT&T, and I've never had a cable like that.
Well, it's also not like, you know.
And I don't think it's used for anything else. I think Westel modems use on.
Is it only Westel?
I don't know.
It's possibly.
That modem was a Westel.
I don't feel out of touch for that reason.
Not for that.
Not for that. But
an intuitive piece of kit.
Well, you know, I say that, you know, if there is technology in the world that I have no firsthand experience with. I just don't. I've never, ever taken a picture with a Canon camera, for example. Or a Nikon, because I shoot Sony. I don't have the opportunity to try everything out. I don't try out all the different cable modems that exist.
Well, see, I know very little about, for example, fiber cabling. I see it, I use it, but I don't actually deploy it or pick different, you know, fiber styles and connectors
and all
that stuff.
In the biz, we call that fabling.
Fabling?
Fiber cabling is fabling. See, you're out of touch.
Are you making this up as you go along?
No, he's fabling.
I'm so out of touch. You might be right. But anyway, let's see. Okay, so it's enjoyed your Halloween extravaganza, but your puzzlement over the Ethernet cable with an extra USB tip at the end.
It was a bloody hook.
Come on, man. Made you seem out of touch. Verizon supplied me with just such a connector. Okay, so none of us use Verizon for our home DSL. That's the issue.
But that's kind of like, it's like, If you've seen it and worked with it, then it seems obvious to you. But to other people who haven't, it
should be nice to him. He's in Brooklyn. I guess the guy that got close to getting hit by a hurricane or something.
They got a little rain.
Oh, your split USB Ethernet cable didn't protect you, did it? I only get Ethernet cables that prevent hurricanes.
Hurricane-proof Ethernet cables.
Yeah, all of my Ethernet cables are, in fact, hurricane averters.
That's right.
I think we should just start making up other hybrid cables so that we sound in touch. And
I am going to become a champion for hybrid cables.
I have my new new iPad Lightning fiber optic.
I personally, my favorite is the Centronics Thunderbolt.
Well, I'm a big fan of adapting things to different connectors, so you know. DVI to VGA cable connectors. I've got five of them on my desk.
I switched all my monster cables to cryptozoology cables.
It's like when I...
all my Bigfoot cables are now Sasquatch cables.
I took all my DVDs and I put glue on one side and then I glued them together. So
they were two-sided?
I had dual-layer DVDs.
I've got my new headphone to Ethernet jack adapter. So, all right, Groovehouse, let's see if I have a call in the queue.
Yeah.
But anyway, that should hopefully entertain RT if he's listening to the podcast. No, it was, you know, we take these criticisms seriously. We got two criticisms this week. We hardly ever get any, but we got two.
Why are we
week.
Relevant?
Oh,
what's going on?
I guess, you know, yeah. I don't know. All right. Groovehouse.
Yeah.
Who is it? What do they want?
I don't know. We're going to find out. It's Anthony.
Anthony, you're on the Aero Technology Bites.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Okay, I typed up a lot of Word documents, and I've done some presentations, and I saved everything to my jump drive. Save as, send it to my jump drive. I lost the jump drive. Didn't back it up, don't have it saved. Is there any way I can go into my laptop and retrieve that stuff? I saved it straight to my jump drive, you know, sent it to the USB.
So you created the file and you saved it to the jump drive. It was never saved to your local hard drive.
That's correct.
No, there's no way to get it.
The only
possibility
somewhere maybe there was like a cache
temp file,
a temp file that if, has like, some version of it.
Like if it's Word, but a good when Word saves and you close the document, Word's supposed to clean up the temp file. So really, the only hope you ever you would have is if the file existed in some capacity on the hard drive of that computer.
Okay, so if I saved it to my computer, and then the next day saved as and sent it to my jump drive, I could still find that on my laptop?
Yeah, if you didn't delete it, it should be right there.
Yeah, because there'll be that copy, well, and then there'll be the copy.
It's not that obvious. I mean, is it hidden somewhere? Or?
Well, where did you put it? How did you get it on your computer in the first place?
That's how I created it. I went to programs, Word doc, typed up that essay.
But you typed it up, and you opened Word, and you hand-typed in all of the data, and did you save it to your hard drive ever? Like, did you actually click File, Save As, name the file, and put it on your hard drive?
And then?
You did. There's a question on the table. Did you do that?
And then I moved it to my jump drive.
Okay, when you moved it to your jump drive, did you grab that file with your mouse and drag it and drop it onto the jump drive?
No, I went back up to the floppy disk Save As.
Okay.
And then I sent it over that way.
So, when you open up Word, you need to figure out where your default save location is, and that's probably where the file is. So what you do is you open up Word, click File and Save As, and it will bring up the default Save As location, and you should be able to see if there are any files in there in that Save As window.
Okay.
Word tip, what operating system? XP, 7, what?
Yeah, it's 7.
Okay. It's going to default save it to your My Documents folder.
Okay, default save My Documents.
So,
if you go look in your My Documents folder, so if you click File and Save, no, if you click File and Save, it's going to default to that Documents folder, or should, but that's how you're going to tell where your Word is default saving to. And once you know that location, then you can go look for it in Windows Explorer. Okay. Also, if you happen to know the name of the file that you saved it as, Search will find it for you as well.
Okay. Search the name of the file. Yeah. Okay, guys, y'all been a lot of help. Let's hope I can find this.
All right, good luck, Anthony. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye.
Right. Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I don't back up very much to a flash drive is, one, they're easy to lose, and two, even just carry them around your pocket or whatever, they can get damaged and stop working. Now, people have argued that point with me, but it's true.
But they go through the wash. I've had them.
Well, the solid state part of the drive actually stays intact, but it's delicate electronics that they put into the cheesy plastic when they build them that actually goes bad. All right. Well, I think that's it. I think we are out of time. We are out of calls. We're out of patience. You can close your laptop, Barrett. Go ahead.
Episode.
What?
And Pete's out of bandwidth.
Pete's out of bandwidth. Mm-hmm. All right, well, cue the outro. Thank you. You know, today has just been, I've been out of sorts today, too, because yesterday was so exciting. There was the election. There was a new camera. Today, it's kind of a letdown.
It's just another day.
Just another day.
But it's Technology Bites Day.
It was good that we came in and got to do a show that was normal.
Because we won't next week.
We won't be here next week.
Right.
What? Where are we going?
We're taking the week off so that KPFT can present to you the fundraiser for the Pacifica National Archives.
What are
National
we going to do on Wednesday?
Beer week, I think. Okay. Yeah, we got it covered. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you a week from Wednesday. This has been Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
Yes.
I'm Flickin.
I'm Barrett.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Greenhouse.
All right. Let's go.
Attention! KPFT is facing big financial challenges.
We must act now to save our station from further decline. My name is Joseph Kay. I've served on the LSB for 5 years. I'm again running for the station board to represent all listeners and all groups in our community, especially the challenge. We can create solutions that can work and must act now. I've started and run businesses. I've done major fundraising for the Hunger Project. I ask for your vote and for your help. My name is Dr. Joseph Kay, and I intend to work on these problems. Financial sufficiency, membership growth. Ending hunger work has taught me what works. Vote for me, Joseph Kay, jck35@live.com. Contact me if you want to help. Contact me. Together we will create bold action plans. Si se puede. Yes, we can.
You're listening to Vegan World Radio, KPFT Houston 90.1, Galveston 89.5, and Huntsville 89.7, Goodrich Livingston 90.3, part of the Pacifica Network.